About 3 months ago, somebody had asked me to, you know, to share this particular group right here, this particular meeting. And I can remember someone saying to me, "Mark, you know, you really need to get involved." And I said, "Yeah, yo, can I get on one of the committees?" And I had no idea I'd be doing this right here. So all that's to tell y'all, I'm really nervous right now. But, you know, I've turned it over to my higher power. And, all I have to do is just be honest. My clean date is March 3rd, 1994. And I had given a try of trying to come into the rooms once before back in 87, unsuccessfully, I might add, because I wasn't ready. I wasn't willing. And upon coming in this time, I was pretty much beat down. You know, I was in a lot of pain. I was really ready to surrender. And coming in, I didn't know what to expect. And really all I wanted to do was just be clean. But in that treatment facility, you guys started talking to me about, you know, I had a problem long before I got here. And as I kept coming back day after day, I started finding out what you all mean. And I guess where the addict comes in, keep coming back, more will be revealed. And you all started talking about the steps. You know, we started talking about the first step, and that first step is a two-part step, you know, about being powerless and being unmanageable. And the powerlessness for me was I just couldn't stop using. You know, that thing had a hold on me. You know, it's a movie we're all familiar with. You know, that he said that thing, just keep calling him. And that was me. Just kept calling me. And I would answer it. You know, there were times when I didn't want to answer it, and I answered anyway because I didn't know what else to do. I didn't want to, you know, what I know today is I didn't want to feel. You know, I didn't want to go through those emotions. I didn't want to, you know, I buried a lot of stuff in my past. And, you know, y'all would tell me little things like the second step to come in and, you know, "Mark, why don't you make us God for a little while, you know, until you find that God of your understanding," you know, and I would do that. You know, I was starting to take some suggestions. And I think where I got convinced, as far as the second step goes, you know, I was dealing with the IRS. You know, I was a guy that was on the run when I came in here. I was on the run from a lot of things. And I was dealing with the IRS, and I was expecting someone to say, "Don't worry about paying that $13,000. You can go free." Right? And it didn't happen like that. You know, y'all told me if I let somebody in here know what's going on, I would get some help. So, you know, I let somebody know, and the guy told me, he told me something real simple. He just said, "Pick up the phone, call, and make some arrangements." And that's what I did. And that, through God's grace, 2 years ago, you know, I paid off that $13,000. And, you know, now I'm looking at them. Y'all pay me this year, you know. And it's been a blessing, you know. So things like that, you know, have kept me to continually keep coming back. Now, you know, when we got to the third step, y'all were really asking a task of me, you know, to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. Y'all were really asking me to do something I didn't want to do. And the reason why is I didn't trust God. You know, God, to me at that time, he took so long to give me what it was I wanted. You know, because I use God as God, give me, give me, give me. You know, we're talking about the car, we're talking about the woman, we're talking about clothes, money, job, etc. And it seemed like God, for whatever reason, was always letting me down. And then I had, you know what, the way I knew about God was when it seemed when I needed him most, that's when he would show up. And I'd be like, you know, it took you long enough. And I would be worried, you know, in other words. You know, but what y'all told me was, you know, I would listen to one guy share, and he would say that for him, with the third step, he had to keep coming back, keep going to meetings, listen, read, and ask questions. Now, I'm the kind of guy I always wanted to fit in. So since I'm in Narcotics Anonymous, I'm going to fit in. I'm going to do what he did. And I found out what worked for him was working for me. And one day at a time, you know, slowly but surely, I'm able to turn my will and my life over to care of God like I'm doing right now with all y'all looking at me. You know what I mean? And, you know, so I'm going along, and I know, you know, we talk about being on the pink cloud. And I know I rode the pink cloud for a long time. And as each anniversary would go by, my sponsor would say to me, "You know, Mark, it's time to do some work. You know, it's time to do some work." And I'm like, yeah, okay. And I really wouldn't get serious. But, you know, what was going on was I started repeating some of the same patterns that y'all told me that I was doing before I got here, before I actually started using. I started repeating some of those patterns. You know, I dealt with a lot of issues that I really didn't think I had. And I like to, you know, project this image for y'all, to let y'all think that I'm okay. You know, but y'all told me when I walked through that door, y'all already knew my wheels fell off, you know. And but I was still, you know, carrying that same behavior. And my sponsor, he recognized it. And this is right around my third year. He suggested that I start doing my fourth step. And I didn't want, you know, I was still in denial about some of those things that he was talking about, and I didn't really want to do the fourth step. But one of the things was I was afraid when I got here. It was a lot of fear going on with me, and I was too fearful to go back out and use. And I really wanted to stay here. This was something that I wanted to complete just for me. You know, because before, it was to keep the ex-wife from bothering me about, you know, not paying the bills. You know, before, it was to keep my mom from having to pay the youngins around the corner. You know, because I'm running from them because I don't want to pay that bill. You know, that kind of thing. And this particular time, I just wanted it for me. But again, it was fear. You know, it was a lot of fear for me. And it took me about a year to do my fourth step. And to show you how God works, I had a hernia. And I had to have operations. So, I mean, I was out of work for about a month and a half. And someone had shared in the meeting before this one here, you know, whenever we get ready to take on a great task, we need to put God first. We need to pray and meditate on it. And all those times I procrastinated, you know, didn't want to write and all of that, I had nothing else to do. I couldn't drive my car. You know, couldn't go out hanging. I didn't have a job to go to. And I prayed. And before I knew it, I was just writing things down. I was just writing. Things were flowing. And the literature tells us that we are not going to be able to remember everything. You know, just do the very best that you can. And, you know, getting into the fifth step, the person that I shared my fifth step with was my sponsor. And the blessing for me was that he was my aftercare counselor after I came out of treatment. So there were a lot of things he already knew about me in the first place. So it made it a little bit simpler for me. And that's just mine. It made it a little bit simpler for me. And what I would do, I would pick up the phone, I would call him, you know, let him know if I'm at a stuck point. You know, y'all tell me if I'm at a stuck point to put the pen down and pray. You know, and sometimes for me, I had to pick the phone up, you know, and ask my sponsor, you know, a question about something I'm getting ready to write, because there was some apprehension in there for me. You know, it's just some things I just didn't want to put down on paper, and some things I really wasn't sure about. You know, so he would let me know, he'd give me the nod on whether I needed to do this, or he would ask me what I thought, you know, and I would make the decision from that point there. So, you know, I would write and write. Like I said, I was home for like a month and a half, and I had prayed about it, and, you know, I got to the point where I thought I was finished. So I picked up the phone, I called my sponsor, and I said, hey, this is what I have on paper. And I read like the last paragraph or so to him. He said, well, it sounds to me like you're finished, right? So from that point, he says, well, I'll tell you what, now, you know, this is something we needed to do in a hurry. So he said, not so much as in a hurry, we could not procrastinate. So he says, Mark, tell you what, I'm going to meet you Saturday at 3 o'clock. Don't go nowhere. So I said, okay, you know, a little nervous about it and all of that. So sure enough, 3 o'clock that Saturday afternoon, kind of a dreary afternoon, he comes over. And he comes in the house and he says, turn the TV off, turn the radio off, right, and let's have prayer. And that was the most important thing. And we had to invite God in because the literature tells us right off the top that we're admitting to God ourselves and another human being, the exact natures of our wrongs. And, you know, he prayed and he invited God in. And I needed that. And for whatever reason, there was a calm in the room. You know, there was a calm in the room. He said, okay, let's go. And I actually wanted him to read it. You know, I really wanted him to read it. But he said, no, come on, you can do this. You can do this. So, you know, I sat down and he sat down. And I would go along and I would read some things. I was a little apprehensive, but he could tell, you know, so he would kind of stop me. You know, what's wrong? What's wrong? Well, it's something in here, you know. So then he said, well, go ahead. You know, it's okay. Because by this time, I had realized that I already trusted him. The literature speaks about that, too, that we need to trust this person, you know, because there's integrity involved. And we don't want that information, to, you know, to get back out to people when we're not ready to have it come back out. You know, so I would share whatever it was on paper with him. And if he felt like I was comfortable, and I can tell you God is working, because I know that's a sponsor I'm supposed to have. Because when God is working, what he would do, he would share something about himself, you know, relating to that, so I wouldn't feel alone, you know, and he would be sincere about it, you know. And then come to find out, just knowing him a little bit, our story is a whole lot of light. So, I shared some more things, and after I put everything out on the table as best I could and as honestly and as willingly as I could, he would share some things with me after that. And a whole lot of things came out, you know, a whole lot of my character defects he let me know about that I didn't think I had. You know, a whole lot of those issues that I didn't think I had. You know, a whole lot of harm that I didn't think I did. You know, and things that were done to me that I didn't realize had been done. You know, and I was kind of astonished on some of the things that he told me about, but he gave me something to work with. And now, This is the part where he messed me up. He said, Mark, now that we've talked about this, you have no reason to bounce off the walls. You have no reason to swing from the chandeliers and cry victory. So that messed me up right there. You know, man, I can't act crazy no more. You know, and say I don't know. In other words, y'all telling me y'all took away all my excuses. You know, and with that being said, you know, even though he had told me that, you know, and I acknowledge that you told me this, you know, and I'll share it with you in the rooms, I still had to live it. I still had to go out and live it. And lo and behold, I heard, you know, someone had shared with, you know, was sharing the rooms, you know, certain things, or was sharing with me certain things. And one of the things they said was, you know, I'm really starting to relive some of that stuff in my fourth step. And I'm like, damn, so am I. And it's a regular thing. I'm a human being. I'm an addict, you know, and I'm not perfect. But y'all took away all my excuses. In other words, I should know better. And just to give you some insight, I'm one of those guys, you know, I don't like rejection. I don't like being rejected. You know, I don't like being told no. I should be the center of attraction. I'm very much self-centered. I'm very much selfish. You know, I just got to have it my way. I got to be in charge. I got to be running something. So, you know, just using this as an example, it's real important that I prayed before I came in here. It was real important that I prayed before I came in here because y'all told me, Mark, just get your ego out of it. You know, let God do the rest. So what happens with me is when it comes to relationships with women, when it comes down to the sex, I want to beat you up. And I'm just being honest for me. Because I still don't always know how to handle those feelings, you know. I don't always know what to say. But what the fifth step has done for me, it gave me freedom. Because after he and I shared on the fifth step, what he went on ahead and left. And I stood in the room. And I was standing there like this. I'm waiting for something to happen. You know, waiting for, you know, something, you know, waiting for a glow or anything to happen. And what I know today was happening because I did, took a deep breath. I exhaled. I got freedom. And I know somewhere in that fifth step it talks about we get freedom when we come in here. And I'm able to share with the person what's going on with me. You know, so I can come in here and get some help because I'm still very much a sick fella. You know, I'm still very much a sick person. And, you know, I can go into a room and I may not really want to talk about it and everything is not meant for the rooms. You know, but that's why y'all tell me to make sure I have a network. So I got a friend of mine who's in here now. He and I, we can get together and we can talk and I can tell him some of those manly things that I don't want anybody else to know. You know, and he'll share with me and we'll give each other some help. You know, or y'all will tell me, you know, Mark, there's going to be a time when you feel like using. You know, you're not going to be able to get in touch with your sponsor. You're not going to be able to get to a meeting. You're not going to be able to use the phone at all. You're going to have to call on God. So sometimes I got to say to God out loud, I'm wrong in this. You know, I heard somebody say it earlier talking about that conscience. You know, I'm wrong in this. And I have to realize my wrongs in these things. And I'm able, and because I want to stay here, I tell y'all what's going on with me. That's what the fifth step has done for me. It's given me freedom. I know when I'm getting ready to do it now, I start sweating bullets, right? I would get in a meeting and have to share, and I would start sweating because I know I'm about to be honest about something, and I'm concerned about what y'all think. I'm really concerned about what y'all think, but as time has gone on, it's gotten a little better for me that I'm not really concerned about what you think, even though I think about it. But what I know is when I come in here and I share, and I'm honest, and I'm open with what I'm feeling, with what I'm going through, even if I don't know what I'm feeling, I'm getting some help. Like right now with me sharing, I know I'm up here to help me. You know, hopefully somebody gets some help out of it, but I'm really up here to help me. And, you know, the fifth step allows me to go to a meeting, and when someone asks me to lead a meeting or to be a speaker at a meeting, you know, I know I have to give it back. I can't hold on to what it is I have because just when I think I got it and I'm that good that I can hold on to it, I'm back out of here using it again. And that's just for me. That's just for me.
30 minutes, right?
Sometimes my role in recovery is not an easy one because sometimes I don't feel like recovering. You know, I don't want to recover. I want to act out. You know, I want to be the mean, self-centered person, you know, that I was before I came in here. Sometimes I don't want to grow up, you know, but I have to come in here and share with you all that I don't feel like growing up. You know, I don't want to do this today. I don't want to, well, you know, whatever it is. I don't want to tell y'all exactly what it was I did to the girl in order to have her slap me. You know, oh, she just smacked me, man, you know. But Mark, what did you do? You know, so sometimes that fifth step is forced on me, you know, whether I want to tell it or not. Bottom line, that's God working. That's God working. I was glad that I think I knew right off the top that I was going to use my sponsor because, again, I said, like I said before, he already knew some things about me because I walk around with an image, and he has a way of letting me know, Mark, you are not God Jr. You are not running anything. And he can break that thing down and keep it real simplified for me. And it makes it a little bit easier because trust me when I tell you, I talked to him yesterday, I talked to him this morning, and then he made it his business to come over and talk to me, you know, about an hour before I came up here. But, you know, I need that though. You know, because what that has taught me to say is when I don't know, tell y'all I don't know, you know. And I have to do that. I really have to do that. I have to let somebody know when I don't know something. It doesn't hurt. You know, I can get my ego out of the way. I got to talk for 30 minutes, and I don't know how I'm going to do it. Any other time I can run my mouth. But can I call on somebody? No. you know, I'm really, really, really glad to be here because a lot of what I was told certain things before I got here, what not to, you know, kind of share on. You know, I was told not to share on certain things when I got in here. But I'm going to tell y'all, I do know that I do nothing without a God of my understanding. If there are any newcomers in here and you're not sure about, you know, this God, I dare you to give it a try. That's really all I can tell you. That's really all I can tell you. I dare you to give it a try. I know the God of my understanding has made a lot of things possible for me. I enjoy coming down here every year. I really do. Last year, I didn't know if I was going to be able to come down here or not, and then, of course, the God of my understanding made it possible. But this year is something new for me. I didn't think that I would be involved the way that I am. I really didn't think I would be involved the way that I am. I'm running out of words. I really am. I'm running out of words, y'all. And I'm sitting there trying to make up stuff, and y'all told me to share that, so I'm sharing it. My name is Mark. I'm an addict. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mark. Our next speaker will be speaking on the fifth tradition, and that's Brian.
Everybody, my name is Brian, and I'm an addict. By the grace of God, I get to stand here and be clean with you people today. I took my front tooth out. I wear this for cosmetic purposes, but when I started talking, it falls out. It has a tendency to fall out, and the mask has to go. And the message is, you shoot heroin, this is what happens. You lose your teeth. And I'm honored that the committee asked me to come and share. I got clean in the South Potomac area of Narcotics Anonymous a few 24 hours ago, and it's great to look around the room and see people that I know that I got clean with and some new people and all that. And I get butterflies, as usual, every time that I start sharing, and I prayed before the meeting or before the workshop. I said, God, just help me, don't throw up, and help me get through this and maybe say something that might help somebody or help me. And I've been asked to share on the fifth tradition. I want to qualify that I'm not a traditions expert or a step expert in recovery. I've been to a bunch of workshops already yesterday and today, and I've heard psychiatrists, and I've heard some preachers, and I've heard some expertise in here, and I want you all to know that I'm just a dope fiend trying to stay clean a day at a time, and by the grace of God, I've managed to stay around here a little while, And I know that this program works. And I was thinking about the meetings that I went to before I came to Narcotics Anonymous, because I met with addicts a lot before I ever came to NA. We had our meetings. We didn't meet in church basements, and we didn't meet in rec centers. We met in places like ballrooms and oil joints and stuff like that. And we had a primary purpose, too. Ain't wasn't nobody going to divert us from our primary purpose. And we had our ultimate authority, too, in our meetings. That was the man that was holding the dope. Or the man that had the money. You know? And we followed the leader, too. And I was thinking about what it was like when I got to Narcotics Anonymous as I was meditating about this fifth tradition and the suffering that I was in. And, you know, it's real easy for me to remember the oil joints, and it's real easy for me to be in today, but a lot of times I have a built-in forgetter about what it was like when I first walked into my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, more dead than alive. I don't know if y'all can relate to the feelings that I had. I guess y'all can relate because we all know what it's like to have one day clean. You see, I reached this place where I knew that the dope wasn't working no more and that I was going to die real soon, but yet I couldn't imagine living without it because that's all I knew. That's all I had ever done. That's a hell of a dilemma. That's a hell of a jackpot for a person to be in. It don't work no more, but I can't live without it. You know? And I'd like to tell you that I came into Narcotics Anonymous and seen y'all smiling faces and all that, and I just believed automatically that this program would work for me. But I had my reservations and I had my doubts. But people told me, Brian, you just keep coming back. You just bring your tail in here. Just keep coming back. Just keep coming back. And that is the most profound message that any addict can ever tell another addict, is just keep coming back no matter what happens to you. And our fifth tradition, you know, kind of goes on, and I like to think about it as being sure that the atmosphere of recovery is maintained in whatever group that we're in, the atmosphere of recovery. I've been to some meetings where there's just a real strong spirit and a real powerful atmosphere of recovery. And there again, I've been to some meetings and I don't know what's going on in there, you know? I don't know what they're talking about. But there's always like a little newcomer that comes on and says, man, that was a dynamite meet, man. I done got a hell of a message out of that meet, you know? So I never know how God is working, in the rooms and through people in here. When I shot dope and when I smoked coke and did all that stuff, I don't know about y'all, but I liked pure drugs. What I'm saying is that I didn't like my drugs being diluted with things, you know. And that's kind of how I like my Narcotics Anonymous. And our sixth tradition goes on to say that there are things that can divert us from our primary purpose. And when that happens, that's very dangerous because this very fragile atmosphere that addicts need to recover, man, if that primary purpose gets diverted, what happens is addicts die as a result of it. I've gone through my phases of recovery, you know. I got here, and I guess what I want to do was know it all and kind of learn all I could about all this. And what happened was I put on this badge called Traditions Police. I don't know if anybody else in here has ever wore the badge of Traditions Police. I done gave it up. I resigned the position a while back. Because it takes a lot of energy to be a Traditions Police. I would go into a meeting, I was like little Barney Fife, you know, and somebody would do something to violate a tradition or something like that, and I would show them in the basement. It says right here on page 62, paragraph 2, man, that, you know, you shouldn't be doing that, you know. And what I've learned is the spirit of the traditions, man, is they are not to be used to hammer another addict upside the head with. They are not to be used for that. If you read the wording of all of our traditions, it really don't say must anywhere in the traditions. It says words like should, ought, not must, you know, anything like that, you know. And what I've learned is really the ultimate authority about any of our traditions is the disease of addiction, because what happens is either we conform to what this program is all about or the disease will catch up with us sooner or later. And I've learned to go to meetings and when I see things kind of go on and they're a little bit out of order, people don't know what they're doing, but really what they're doing is helping me with some patience and some tolerance. I was at a meeting not too long ago, man, and people were in there talking. Now, some of you people been around here will know what I'm talking about. The speakers in the meeting were talking about their sobriety and, you know, what they do for their sobriety. And you knew where those speakers were coming from and what fellowship they come from. And if you read our literature, it says that use of speakers and things like that from outside enterprises and all that constitutes an implied endorsement, you know. And there again, I had to sit in that meeting, you know, kind of keep my hand down, you know, and not, because what I'll do, the negative addict that I am, I'll sit there and get so focused on what's wrong with the meeting and I'll miss out on the 100 beautiful things that's going on in that meeting. When I came to Narcotics Anonymous, like I said, I was more dead than alive and suffering and had a will that it really just said, Brian, kill yourself. Blow your brains out. There's no point in going on living. An example that you people in Atmosphere Recovery gave me just gave me a little bit of hope that maybe this program might work for me. And like I said, I didn't believe that it would work. And so I learned a little bit of something, and here again, I hope I don't offend anybody or anything like that, but I learned a little bit about what meeting etiquette is about, and I think that's very important to carry the message and to keep us to our primary purpose, because other things can divert us from our primary purpose, and I got direction with all that. I was taught that you get your tail into a meeting on time, and back in the day when I got clean, you could smoke cigarettes in meetings and all that, but I was told to go to the bathroom, take a piss, get yourself a cup of coffee, sit yourself down, and stay put until the meeting's over with. And that's how I learned to be on time, man, for my job. I didn't know nothing about being on time before I got to Narcotics Anonymous. That's how I learned to be on time. And I remember, you know, like a lot of dope fiends, you took away the dope. And there was just this awful void inside of me, you know, and I hadn't found God yet. I heard y'all talking about God and all that. And the first awakening I had was my hormones started waking up, you know, and coming into meetings and looking at all you pretty women and all that. And I remember going to my sponsor at the time and telling how much I really wanted to be in a relationship. And I thought I was ready. I had something to offer somebody, and I wanted to be in a relationship with a lady. And then, you know, my life would be complete. And what my sponsor told me was, Brian, what you need to do is get your tail in that chair, sit down, and see if you can hold on to that relationship for an hour without breaking up. And you know what? In all the years I've been coming around Narcotics Anonymous, that's been the healthiest relationship I've been in. The relationship I had with my ass in that chair. And there's been lots of meetings I've gone to that I really felt like breaking up, you know? And some nights I had to. I just kind of had to get away, you know? Sometimes, you know, the message that I carry, man, is keeping my mouth shut in a meeting, too. You know, I've been asked to share at a lot of anniversaries. Matter of fact, this kind of got ridiculous for a while. I was sharing at so many meetings. People were coming up asking me to come share and speak at their anniversary. I didn't even know who they were and stuff, man. I mean, you know, like I'm something or, you know, and I'm just a dope fiend. And I've learned in here that sometimes in a group level, man, the most powerful message that the man is a man that comes into a meeting and just kind of stands to the side and lets things go and talks to the newcomer real quietly and hardly ever says a word in the meeting. You know, it's just like no big deals. And sometimes, and our 12-step talks about that, man, that the message is carried in silence sometimes. The thing about the fifth tradition that really, if you notice, and if anybody who's traveled around in Narcotics Anonymous, it really doesn't matter where you go around the world, what state you're in, what city you're in, what country you're in, it's always kind of the same when you go there, man. And it's the one common bond that holds us together. And I was at an earlier workshop, and I heard the speaker in there talking about Slewfoot. And I believe Slewfoot dwells in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And it talks about, when I got clean, we didn't read the backside of the traditions. We just had the 12 traditions, and that was the end of it. But there's some really interesting information inside all that. And it talks about the forces internal that could destroy us around here. And, you know, think about what Narcotics would be like if it was a social club, you know. I have a man who, I'm not going to break his anonymity, but I look up to him as much as anybody. And I don't even really know him that well, but every time he shares, he tells the truth, which makes him kind of, in a lot of circles, not a very popular person, because that's the last thing a lot of addicts want to hear is the truth. And one night he went to a meeting, and this is a story I heard about. He went into a meeting, it was kind of a real big meeting where all the guys had all their hair slicked back and combed and had their gold on and all that, and all the girls were showing all their, you know, and all that. And, you know, it was a pickup joint is what it was. And he sat there, he was leading the meeting that night, and he sat there and they did all the readings. And he said, I think what we ought to do tonight is have all you guys pass your phone number up here. And all you ladies pass your phone number up here and we'll just sit here and hook them all together. Because that's why y'all are in here tonight. A lot of people didn't want to hear all that stuff, man. And, you know, I've kind of brought that atmosphere into the meetings, because there's been a lot of nights that was my primary purpose of going to meetings, because I was lonely. I had a void inside of me, and I didn't go to meetings to hear the message of recovery. I went to meetings to get some you-know-what. That's why I went. But you know what? I guess there ain't no right or wrong reason for coming, because I kept coming back. And I learned from my mistakes in recovery. I haven't met anybody yet that comes into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and just kind of automatically gets this program right off. I'm one of them hard knuckleheads that I got to learn the hard way. You know, that's sort of the way I got it. And just like when I was out on the street and shooting dope and smoking crack and doing the things that we do, I needed you people to show me how to live without drugs, man. And I've seen profound messages of recovery brought about and come to pass since I've been in Narcotics Anonymous. I have a sponsor right now who's suffering from terminal cancer. And not talking about how miserable he feels, but talking about how grateful he is to be alive. I had another sponsor who I buried, had a massive heart attack. And Ed knew that he was going to die in a matter of weeks because they couldn't do a heart transplant for him and stuff like that. And there was nothing they could do. And the night that he got that news, what he did was he went to a homeless shelter, picked up some homeless addicts and took them to a meeting and went there and talked about it. See, the message of recovery is not about going back out and relapsing. It's not about it. It's about staying clean despite all the odds. And those are the people that I watch and those are the people that I look up to. If I wanted to go use, it's real easy. All I got to do is go right down the street, man, and get me some booze, man. I don't even need an excuse to use. But I came in here because the war was over. Now, for me, I don't know, like I say, some people, you know, like to go to meetings with this format. Some people like to go to meetings with that format. And I guess people get the message louder some. But the frequency kind of tunes into me when I go to a Step in Tradition meeting. And my home group is called Stepping Into Traditions down in Pomfret, Maryland. We meet on Sunday night at 7:30. And if you want to go to a meeting where there's a lot of loud personalities and a lot of controversy and all that, that's the wrong meeting to go to. Because what we do at my home group is we kind of get along and we study the literature and we show up for each other. And a lot of newcomers come to that meeting and I notice that they come back again and again. And I think if a group does that, if they come together and put the literature out and get a speaker who's been around a little bit and carries a message of recovery, the group's done its job when someone comes back and goes to another meeting. And that's all we ask that an addict do around here is that you come back to another one tomorrow if you make it that long. And but for me, I kind of got clean in an atmosphere of a lot of step meeting and tradition meeting recovery. In South Potomac area, it was kind of just growing, and we certainly violated all kinds of traditions growing up. You know, we learned, and we learned from our mistakes. My first home group was called Save the Addicts. We met Saturday night up at the Williams Center in Oxon Hill, Maryland. And the message was, at that group, that if I went there on Saturday night, there was four or five people that I could count on seeing there every Saturday night. The Saturday night was a trigger for me. I didn't need a day of the week to use, but I always use a little bit extra on Saturday. You know, always use a little bit. Saturday was kind of a highfalutin day for me. And another thing that made me feel so safe about that meeting is that most of the meetings I was going to was an hour meeting, but that meeting, for some reason, they made it for an hour and a half, and I got to feel safe for an extra hour and a half. And I got to come to my home group, and I remember there was a guy there that was a secretary, and his job was to go out to get the speaker, and there was another addict there that went to area service, and they came back with all the news and all that, and there was another addict there that held on to the money, and my job was to sit there and look burnt out. trying to maintain that relationship with my ass in the chair without breaking up. And I remember how the meetings were when I got there, and I remember all the addicts would do, just like the meeting was like Toinette did at the beginning of this meeting. They did how it works, and they said, group participation, please. And I remember how badly I wanted to be able to remember the steps so I could say it just like everybody else. I couldn't even remember half of the first step, you know, for a long time. Matter of fact, I couldn't even remember my sponsor's phone number for almost a year. I had to carry it around in my wallet. I was that fried. But that's what I did. I would go to the meeting, and I would hope one day that I would be able to say all those steps. And I remember I wanted to share so bad. I had all kinds of good, profound things to say, but I was so scared and I was so intimidated. I was so frightened to say anything. So what I did was I sat back in the back of the room and looked burnt. And then when I left the meeting, I'd be in my pickup truck driving home, and I'd be sharing all kinds of profound shit, man, going down the road. I'd be sitting at a traffic light, and I'd be talking, man, by the grace of God, man, and people would be looking at me like, Jesus Christ. Crazy. 11 years later, I'm still doing the same shit, man. I'm just a dope fiend trying to get better a day at a time. I was told that when I go to a meeting, if I could just retain one thing from that meeting, man, that I've done good. It's so important that this fifth tradition goes on, because addicts are like plants. We need the proper atmosphere to recover. And if a plant doesn't get enough water, if it doesn't get enough sunlight, if it doesn't get enough of whatever it needs, man, the plant will die. And it's my job as a member of any group that I walk into, whether it be an H&I meeting, whether it be at a convention, whether it be in my home group, whatever it be, that I have a responsibility that I uphold the traditions to the best of my ability. And I've learned through coming around here and understanding these traditions come slowly over a period of time, I've learned I'm just but one person in that group. I am not responsible for what that group does. I am not anybody's ultimate authority. I can only be mindful of those traditions to the best of my ability. And you know how I learned about most of them? I learned about them by breaking them, you know, and having somebody come up and pull my tail up. I've learned, like I was saying before, that I'm not going to raise my hand in the middle of the meeting and tear somebody down with all that. I know that there's a loving and caring way to walk up to somebody after the meeting in private and say, you know, this is kind of the way that this was taught to me, and this is what I've learned, and maybe we need to look at it. I've done that before, you know, with people, man. They go, wow, I didn't know. I really didn't know. And then I've been going to people before, and they say, I know, and I don't give a shit. You know? I remember one time we had a sober bikers club, man, that was having an event, you know, and they made the announcement that such and such, and I went up to them after the end of the meeting, and I said, you know, this is, you know, it's cool, you know, but maybe you ought to make that announcement to your friends after the meeting. And in the meeting is inappropriate. It diverts us from our primary purpose, and it implies an endorsement. I know. I don't give a shit. And she's not around here no more. Like I say, this disease is the ultimate authority about these traditions, you know. I don't know if that had anything to do with the other, but well, when someone pulls me up on that stuff, and I've also learned that me enforcing a tradition, I break five or six of them sometimes, you know, trying to be the police officer about this thing, you know. You know. So I've kind of just learned not to be Barney Fife and all that, but just to kind of sit back, let things go, and when somebody asks me, you know, that I try to help somebody if I can. I want to close out. I don't want to talk a long time. Maybe some other people want to come up here and share, but really the message of the fifth tradition is stated in the basic text. And it's really the kind of the whole message of Narcotics Anonymous. And our message is, in case anybody knows, that We can stop using, we can lose the desire to use, and we can find a new way to live. And that's carried by the diverse personalities of Narcotics Anonymous. Some people come in here and tell the truth. Some people just come in here and have a lot of fun, whatever. There's just so many different ways to carry the message of recovery. And I am so grateful that God brought me to these rooms, because I certainly wasn't thinking my way into Narcotics Anonymous when I got here. And our message further goes along to something that we used to say at my home group, Save the Addicts. It's one of the few things that I retain. My twin brother, Nash Jesus, one that started the tradition of us closing our meeting, was something that was found in the basic text of Narcotics Anonymous, the chapter, We Do Recover. And I still remember that to this day, 11 years later. And it really is the message of Narcotics Anonymous. It says, when at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative, either go on as best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, and death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. But those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous. It's amazing that my burnout cells remember that shit. I want to thank you all for the honor and the privilege of being asked to come and share. I'd rather eat a hot bowl of shit and talk about a tradition, man. I'd rather talk about relationships and recovery or something like that. But it's always a privilege to get to come down to Ocean City. I hope everybody has a good time. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, once again, my name is Greg, and I'm an addict. And we got about 20 minutes. If you have anybody wants to share some information on the fifth step or the fifth tradition, come on up. Anyone?
Good afternoon, family. My name is Spike. I'm a grateful recovering addict. Hello, family. It's good to be at a convention on Saturday afternoon. That fifth step. Thanks, Mark, for sharing that, man. The fifth step for me was a clean house step. It was a step that freed me up from a lot of baggage that I had been carrying for years. And a lot of times, those were the reasons why I used, because I didn't want to feel what was coming down the pipe at that time, you know, of the child molestation, of my mother being beat by my father, and a lot of things that happened in my past as a child. I didn't want to feel those things, and those were some of the reasons why I used. And when I got here, man, and found out that people had did some of the same things, been molested, and that had did some things, the fifth step had freed them up. And the fourth and the fifth step was so important to my continuing on recovery. If they wouldn't have had them steps in the order that they had them in, man, I'm quite sure that I probably wouldn't even be here. Because I had carried that stuff for so long and found a place where I wasn't alone. Somebody else had did the same thing or even something worse and had gotten their life back together. You know, that fifth step meant a lot to me, man, because I no longer had to carry that stuff around, man. And if anybody haven't done the fifth step, haven't done the fourth step and the fifth step, I advise you to do it as soon as possible. Because what I found out in my fifth step is that I hadn't done nothing that no one else had ever done. I hadn't invented nothing new, created nothing new, and I wasn't alone. And in doing that fifth step, man, after I'd done it with my sponsor, I had felt so much better. And it was important that I go on immediately to the next step, which was the sixth step. But the fifth step, man, it just freed me up to continue working my program, and the freedom from carrying all that luggage around for all those years. If like they say in the basic text about the pressure cooker, you know, relieving the pressure cooker, that's the way I felt, man. And I tell you, that really made me feel good. But another thing, too, this fifth tradition, you know, the atmosphere of recovery, you know, that's so important, too, because addicts that are still suffering, man, when they come here, man, sometime when they get here, man, it's important that we carry the atmosphere of recovery in a good way, because they're making a decision. They're casing the joint, and they're making a decision whether they're going to come back or not. I mean, the first time they come here, and if we off acting a fool, off the chain, they're going to say, man, that's worse than where I was. You know, I ain't going back there. Them people crazy. And I've been to places, man, where I've seen in my own area, man, where people with time acting like a fool. Here I am with this paraphernalia on, driving my car, flipping somebody off, cussing, acting a fool in the public eye. Sometimes that's the only message that they will get, man. And sometimes, man, being in a meeting with time, I need to learn how to practice some patience and some tolerance and to sit there and be there for somebody else. And I like the way Brian said that about always happening to be right and check somebody on the traditions and whatnot. I'm not the God. You know, I'm not God, and it's important that I pull that person to the side in a loving and caring way and say, man, this is how we do it. You know, that was wrong. We don't do it like that. In a loving and caring way. Not trying to be the ultimate authority. That's so important because, hey, man, you could get clean. You could be clean and get your butt whooped, too, in the meeting. Thanks for letting me see. I keep coming back.
Hi, I'm Paige. I'm an addict. I want to share about my fifth step experience, and this is like a negative fifth step experience. I started my fourth step, I guess, when I had about a year clean. I was bugging my sponsor. I wanted to do it, and then I didn't finish it till I had almost 3 years clean, because once I got permission to do it, I didn't want to do it. I finished it. I was in Florida while my father was dying, and I basically wrote for 3 days. And my ass was on fire, and I got everything out that I needed to get out. And I called my sponsor, and I always picked sponsors that were like authority figures to me, people that I was too in awe of to get really close to. And she made an appointment like 3 weeks later for me, which isn't good. But all this I learned from. The negative turns into a positive. And so I had to wait 3 weeks, and I went to her house, and I was very, very nervous. And I'm very nervous now, too. And I read parts, and we talked about parts. And then I started talking about stealing and that sort of thing. And I was in her house, and she turned around, and she looked at me, and she said, "You're in my house. Have you taken anything out of my house?" And at that point, I just froze up and everything went, you know, I got real paranoid and real upset. And I think we finished it, but I don't remember anything after that. And then she was nice to me, but I couldn't hear anything except her looking at me like I stole something from her. And then she told me to go back to my house and repeat, you know, do my fifth step again with God. And that was a really powerful experience for me. I went back, and I basically got on my knees next to my bed, and I invited God into the room, and we had a chat. And that fifth step took about 3 hours, and it was like he was right there. It was like he was talking back with me. I was crying. I never felt so close to my higher power. But anyway, what I learned from all this is that now when I sponsor people and they share with me, I never do that to anybody, whether they shock me or not, because it just took it. It took the whole experience away from me. And now I've got like 8.5 years, and I'm doing another fourth step that I've been dragging my feet on for 2 years. And I have a different sponsor, and this sponsor I'm still afraid of. I picked a different sponsor, but somebody who's very busy and doesn't really have time for me. And maybe that's one of those patterns he was talking about repeating. You know. And I'm also one of those people that broke tons and tons of traditions and was always getting pulled up on it. So thanks for letting me share.
Would anyone else like to come up and speak on the fifth step or the fifth tradition? Okay. Coming up. Come on down.
Thanks. I'm going to have to call Larry.
Hey, Larry.
And I'm glad to be here. I'm on my second, I'm about to do my second fifth step. My first one, it was before we had the step working guides, right? And that was on my whole life. It really was. For some reason, I went back, you know, as far as my brain would allow, as accurately, right? And I got to know me. It was a beautiful thing, right? Even though I was scared, I got to know me. And that I'm a decent guy. When I'm clean, I do some drugs, I do some bad things. And that was a lovely thing to experience, you know, with my sponsor. And the tradition, the fifth tradition, are the group's primary purpose, right? I know that 6 through 12 tell us how we break it, how we may break it if we're not careful. So I'm interested in learning more about it and try to, now that I've got some steps in my life, try to be of service in NA and help out that way. You know, that helps the group, you know, because they have to concentrate on the recovery meeting and they need the subcommittees to help out, right? Okay, thanks for listening.
I'd like to thank everyone that came up and shared. And once again, my name is Greg and I'm an addict. And I'm going to read just for today. Tell yourself.